The kingdom, known to us by the name of Korea, and by the natives called Joseon-guk, and sometimes Kaoli, reaches from 34 to 44 degrees of north latitude, being about 150 leagues in length from north to south, and about 75 in breadth from east to west. Therefore, the Koreans represent it in the shape of a long square, like a playing card. The houses of the Koreans of quality are stately, but those of the common sort are very mean. Nor are they allowed to build as they please. No man can cover his house with tiles unless he have leave to do so. They are built with wooden posts or pillars, with the interval betwixt them filled up with stone up to the first story. The rest of the structure is all daubed without and covered on the inside with white paper, glued on. The floors are all vaulted, and in winter they make a fire underneath, so that they are always as warm as a stove. This video. The nobility have always an apartment forward, where they receive their friends and lodge their acquaintance. And there they divert themselves, there being generally before their houses a large square or base court with a fountain or fish pond, and a garden with covered walks. The women's apartment is in the most retired part of the house, that nobody may see them. Tradesmen and the chief townsmen generally have a storehouse adjoining to their mansion house, where they keep their goods and treat their friends with tobacco and rice spirits. There are virtuous women among them who are allowed the liberty of seeing people and going into company and to feasts, but they sit by themselves and opposite to their husbands. They have scarce any more household goods than are absolutely necessary. There are in the country an abundance of taverns and pleasure houses to which the Koreans resort to see women dance, sing, and play upon musical instruments. In summer, they take this recreation in cool groves under close, shady trees. They have no particular houses to entertain passengers and travellers, but he who travels goes and sits down where night overtakes him near the palings of the first house he comes at, where, though it may not be a great man's house, they bring him boiled rice and dressed meat enough for his supper. When he goes from thence, he may stop at another house, and at several. Yet on the great road to Seoul, there are houses where those that travel on public affairs have lodging and diet on the public account. The Koreans are very much addicted to stealing, and so apt to cheat and lie that there is no trusting them. They think they have done a good action when they have overreached a man, and therefore fraud is not infamous among them. Yet if a man can prove that he has been cheated in a bargain of houses, cows, or any other thing whatsoever, he may be righted, though it be 3 or 4 months after. Nevertheless, they are silly and credulous, and we might have made them believe anything we would, because they are great lovers of strangers, but chiefly the religious men. They are an effeminate people, and show very little courage and resolution when they are put to it. At least, we were told so by several credible persons who were witnesses to the havoc the Emperor of Japan made in their country when he slew their king. They are not ashamed of cowardice and lament the misfortune of those that must fight. They have often been repulsed with loss when they have attempted to plunder some European vessel that has been cast on their coast, being bound for Japan. They abhor blood and fly when they meet with any. They are much afraid of the sick, and particularly of those that have contagious distempers, and therefore they presently remove them, whether they are in the town or country, and put them into little straw hovels in the middle of fields. There nobody talks to them, but only those that are to look after them who give notice to passengers to keep off, and when the sick man has no friends to take care of him, the others rather let him die than they will come near him. When there is a plague in one town or village, the avenues to it are shut up with a hedge of briars and brambles, and they lay some on the top of the houses where there are any sick, so that all people may know it. They might, when they are sick, make use of the simples that grow in their country, but the people are not acquainted with them, and almost all the physicians are employed by the great ones, so that the poor, who cannot be at that charge, make use of blind men and conjurers, in whom they once reposed such great confidence that they followed them everywhere, across rivers and rocks, and particularly into the temples of the idols, where they called upon the devils. But this custom was abolished by the king's order in the year 1662. Before the Tatar subdued this kingdom, it was full of luxury and debauchery, the Koreans' whole business being eating and drinking and giving themselves up to all lewdness. But now that the Tatars and Japanese tyrannize over them, they have enough to do to live when a year proves bad, because of the heavy tribute they pay, particularly to the Tatar, who comes 3 times a year to receive it. They believe there are but 12 kingdoms or countries in the whole world, which once were all subject and paid tribute to the Emperor of China, but that they have all made themselves free since the Tatar conquered China, he not being able to subdue them. They call the Tatar Tiekse and Orenke, and our country Nampankuk, which is the name the Chinese give to Portugal, and therefore, not knowing us, they give us the same name, having learnt it within these 50 or 60 years, since when the Japanese taught them to plant tobacco, to dress and make use of it, for till then it was unknown to them. And they, telling them the seed of it came from Nampankuk, they often called tobacco Nampankoi. They take so much at present that the very children practice it at 4 or 5 years of age, and there are very few men or women among them that do not smoke. When first brought them, they bought it for its weight in silver, and for that reason they looked upon Nampankuk as one of the best countries in the world. Their writings give us an account that there are 84,000 several countries, but most of them do not believe it, and say that if that were so, every little island and land must pass for a country, it being impossible, they say, for the sun to light so many in a day. When we named some countries to them, they laughed at us, affirming that we only talked of some town or village, their geographical knowledge of the coasts reaching no further than Siam, by reason of the little traffic they have with strangers further than that from them. They have scarce any trade, but only with the Japanese and with the people of an island of Tsushima. The Koreans also have some trade at Peking and in the northern parts of China, but it is very chargeable, because they only go thither by land and on horseback. The great ones and chief merchants buy and pay for all with money, but the meaner sort deal only with rice and other commodities by way of barter. They know no money but their cassis, and those pass only on the frontiers of China. They pay silver by weight in little ingots, like those we bring from Japan. Kindred are not allowed to marry within the 4th degree. They make no love, because they are married at 8 or 10 years of age, and the young maids from that time live in their father-in-law's house. They live in the husband's father's house till they have learned to get their living or to govern their family. The day a man marries, he mounts on horseback, attended by his friends, and having ridden around the town, he stops at his bride's door, where he is very well received by the kindred, who take the bride and carry her to his house, where the marriage is consummated without any other ceremony. Though a woman has borne her husband many children, it is in his power to put her away when he pleases, and to take another, but the woman has not the same privilege unless she can get it by law. To say the truth, they make no great account of their wives, and use them little better than slaves, turning them away for the least faults, and sometimes on bare pretenses, and then they force them to take their children, whom those poor wretches are bound to maintain. The nobility and all freemen in general take great care of the education of their children and put them very young to learn to read and write, to which that nation is much addicted. They use no manner of rigour in their method of teaching, but manage all by fair means, giving their scholars an idea of learning and of the worth of their ancestors, and telling them how honourable those are who by this means have raised themselves to great fortunes, which breeds emulation and makes them studious. It is wonderful to see how they improve by these means, and how they expound the writings they give them to read, wherein all their learning consists. Besides this private study, there is in every town a house where the nobility, according to ancient customs of which they are very tenacious, take care to assemble the youth, to make them read the history of the country and the condemnations of great men who have been put to death for their crimes. To perfect them in their learning, there are assemblies kept yearly in two or three towns of each province, where the scholars appear to get employment, either by the pen or by the sword. The governors of towns send able deputies thither to examine them and choose the best qualified, and according to the report to them, they write to the king. The aspiring to these honours is often the ruin of the candidates, because of the presents they make and treats they give to gain reputation and obtain votes. Some there are also that die by this way. Parents are very indulgent to their children, and in return are much respected by them. It is otherwise with the slaves, who have little care of their children, because they know they will be taken from them as soon as they are able to work or do any business. When a freeman dies, his children mourn 3 years, and during all that time they live as austerely as the religious men, are not capable of any employment, and if any of them is in a post, he must quit it. It is not permitted them to be in a passion or to fight, much less to be drunk. They never go without a great cane or cudgel in their hand, which serves to distinguish who they are in mourning for, the cane denoting the father, and a stick to the mother. During all this time, they never wash. As soon as one dies, his kindred run about the streets shrieking and tearing their hair. Then they take special care to bury him, honourably, in some part of a mountain shown them by a fortune teller. They generally bury their dead in spring and autumn. As for those that die in summer, they put them into a thatched hut raised upon 4 stakes, where they leave them till the rice harvest is over. They have conjurers, diviners or soothsayers, who assure them whether the dead are at rest or not, and whether the place where they are buried is proper for them, in which point they are so superstitious that it often happens that they will remove them 2 or 3 times. When a father is 80 years of age, he declares himself incapable of managing his estate and resigns it up to his children, who maintain their father and always pay him a great deal of respect. When the eldest has taken possession of the estate, he builds a house at the public expense for his father and mother, where he lodges and maintains them. The king told us it was not the customs of Korea to suffer strangers to depart the kingdom, that we must resolve to end our days in his dominions, that he would provide us with all necessaries. Then he ordered us to do such things before him as we were best skilled in, as singing, dancing, and leaping after our manner. Next, he caused us to have meat given us, which was well enough after their manner, and gave each of us 2 pieces of cloth to clothe us after their fashion. The next day, we were all sent before the general of their forces, ordered Wetteri to tell us that the king had put us into his life guards, and that as such he would allow us 70 catties of rice a month. Every one of us had a paper given him, in which we were set down his name, his age, his country, which profession he had followed before, and what now he was, all in their character, sealed with the king's great seal and the general's, which is nothing but the print of a hot iron. Together with this commission, they delivered to each a musket, powder and ball, with orders to give a volley before the general every 1st and 4th day of the month, to be always ready to march into the field with him, whether the king went or upon any other account. Most of the great men, being fond of novelty, invited us to dine at their homes, to see us exercise after our manner and to make us shoot and dance. But above all, their wives and children were eager to see us, because the meaner sort of the island of Quelpart had spread abroad a rumour that we were monstrous, and that when we drank we were forced to tuck up our noses behind our ears. These absurd tales were the cause that the better sort of people at Seoul were amazed to see us better shaped than the people of their own country.